TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. Enjoy more of the things you love with TCL.
Hockey. Yeah.
My favorite.
It's Judd's Hockey Show.
He certainly has a skill to make good plays, good passes. He's very, very aggressive in front of our net. He's a willing and able shot blocker. He's an excellent penalty killer. And, those are things that we value. So, like I said, he's really comfortable in what he brings to the team every night. And he does that. He shows up every night.
That is Wild GM Bill Guerin talking about the acquisition. Yes, he is. And he was talking about the acquisition of 31-year-old defenseman Ian Cole from the Colorado Avalanche as the Wild makes an early season trade. Greg Patterin going to the Avs in that deal. Welcome into Judd's Hockey Show. It is Judd Zolgad, Declan Goff. And Declan, what was your first thought? Because I know that you said that you saw some pushback when you saw that Bill Guerin had made a trade for a veteran D-man that he is very familiar with, because Ian Cole, much like Nick Bonino, who is now with the Wild, won 2 Stanley Cups in Pittsburgh when Billy was the assistant GM there.
I think this is a fine trade. I was wrist deep in wings when I got this trade down. I was at Runyon's in Minneapolis, and they had actually had that NHL Network on, thank God. So I was at Runyon's.
Really?
Good
for Runyon's.
I won some of the best free advertising right here. Some of the best dang wings in the Twin Cities right at Runyon's. Really good stuff. Anyway.
Buffalo Bills fans, close circuit.
Oh, yeah,
to you.
Totally. Totally. And
they had
NHL Network on, and I was with someone, and then all of a sudden I did the classic stop paying attention, and I looked up, and she's like, what are you doing over there? And I was like, there's a trade.
I'm not paying attention to you. There's a trade. Yeah.
There's something that is now taken over.
It's
more important than my wings.
Trade.
It's more important than the drink in my hand. Hold on.
Well, and just say it. It's more important than you right now, because the Wild just made a deal.
That's right. And the Wild trade for Ian Cole, a bottom six guy. And look, this is like people, even Brother Liam texted me, Judd, in a little bit of a panic. Patterin for Cole, he says, with a bunch of question marks. He says, don't like it. The PK was horrible with Patterin out last season. Ian Cole is old and slow. I just don't get the move. All right, look. Ian Cole is a little bit more expensive than Greg Patterin. I get that. Now, at the same time, Colorado was picking up $800,000 of that cap hit. So basically, I think Patterin was making 2.1, and now Ian Cole's making about 3.4 against the Wild's cap.
Yep.
Ian Cole's been there and done that. He's a Bill Guerin guy. He's won a couple Stanley Cups. He actually was a big part of getting that Colorado Avalanche blue line back on track last season. He played 19 minutes a night. He's going to be someone who only is going to play, 13, 14 here, if that.
Mm-hmm.
This is a fine trade. You're swapping out bottom six defense. Like, don't freak out over swapping bottom six last pairing defense. The Wild are so deep
on
defense.
So what's the concern? The cap?
The cap hit, I guess.
But why? Because if you need to make another trade, you're going to probably trade an existing player off your roster and create cap space to then compensate for the cap space that you're taking back.
So, and as of right now, and this is a potential issue, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Right now, as it stands, according to our friends at Cap Friendly, the Wild only have $146,000 in cap space.
What's Dumba make?
Dumba makes $6 million.
Okay.
$6
million. I just solved your problem.
So, and also, and as we talked about on Mackie and Judd, Apple, Spotify, Score North, and YouTube, you can possibly use Ian Cole as two options. Number one, if you start to bottom out, you can sell him off just like the other rentals on this team, like Marcus Johansson, Bonino, Bukestad, go down the list. Or, if you want to trade Matt Dumba to, I don't know, maybe get the top line center you're looking for, you could then plug into Ian Cole because he can play top four. I wouldn't trust him as a mainstay in the top four, but he could slide into that role and it would be fine as a placeholder. The Wild are so deep on the blue line, it really wouldn't matter. So this is a fine trade. Don't freak out. Like I'm not praising it as in it's a savvy move necessarily.
And I don't think the majority of people are probably freaking out.
No.
I think the majority of people are probably saying, okay, fine.
Yeah, and that's what it should be. Okay, fine. It's all right. It's all good.
So going down the path that you just did, I like this trade because it does provide a potential flexibility with a defenseman that Bill Guerin trusts more, which is good. Like, Cole is 32, I think, in February, so he's no kid. He's been around. I think he was drafted in the first round by the Blues in 2007. So he is a veteran player. But he will provide stability. He can probably play top four defense if absolutely necessary. He can certainly pair with Soucy on that last pair. Now, mm-hmm. now Pettern was a right-handed shot, and Soucy is a left shot. Ian Cole is a left shot. But I believe Bill Guerin on the conference call or on the Zoom call about talking about the trade yesterday brought up the fact that Soucy played, I think, on the third pair with Brad Hunt at times last year. And if I'm not mistaken, they're both left shots, and Soucy, I think, played the right side. So that was doable. So for the reasons that you mentioned, I like this trade. But here's where I love this trade.
All right. Hit me.
I continue to applaud the work that Bill Guerin has done to reshape this team on the ice, and just as importantly, off the ice. The veteran guys, I talked about the fact that Cole won a couple Stanley Cups in Pittsburgh after he was brought aboard in 2016-17 when Bill Guerin was the assistant GM to Jim Rutherford there. Nick Bonino was on those teams as well. My point being, so for all that we talked about, the potential captains, right? Foligno, Spurgeon, blah, blah, blah. And it ended up being Spurgeon. The most important thing is that you have a solid room and that you have guys who know how to win. And most importantly, because this was, I think if we were to put together a checklist of off-the-ice things that drove us crazy. about the Wild, not wild about the crazy. Near the top of my list off the ice decks would have been the fact that I don't know for a long time who in that room held players accountable. I don't, for as snarly as Koivu could be, I think he was comfortable. And I don't know that he truly consistently got in guys' faces, right? Parisi and Suter, I don't know that. I don't think so. The young group who began to age, Coyle, Nino, Granlund, that group.
Yep.
I don't think they ever felt comfortable enough or were empowered or felt like that was their role. So my question was, when the team went into a slump, which they quite frequently did, it felt like in January or February, right?
Swoon. Yes.
The swoon. Who like went in there and said, boys, this is going to end right now.
No
like
one.
On my watch. Nobody. So Guerin, who was a captain previously when he was a player and knows exactly what it takes to be an effective leader on a team.
Yep.
Bill Guerin understood that. And so he spent X amount of months after taking the Wild job. And I think he observed and I think he watched and I think he was probably fairly quiet about that. And he saw what we all saw, and that's now changed. And he has now brought in a group of guys on what amount to be, because of their expiration, favorable contracts.
Yep.
But most importantly, who can set, to use Patrick Roycey's least favorite term in the world, a culture
yes.
in that room that we all knew was necessary to be set probably 5 years ago.
This was a good move for Bill Guerin because he knows that this room needs a little shakeup. And bringing in guys like Bonino, bringing in guys like Ian Cole are part of that process. This does not mean that guys like Niederreiter and Coyle and Zucker and Granlund weren't bad hockey players, because I think they were good hockey players and they're serviceable and they're on good careers here. Charlie's had a nice start in Boston, you know, had a goal in the game in Carolina. But Bill Guerin knows what it takes to win. By the way, he's won a couple cups. He's been there, done that. He's a former NHL captain. He moved quickly from retiring right into the front office role with Pittsburgh. And he wants to put his stamp on this team. And as much as Chuck Fletcher was a savvy a guy who wasn't afraid to make a big trade, and Paul Fenton, who I think was a very good scout, but a horrible person and people pleaser, Bill Guerin is easily, I think, the most competent and respected GM the Wild have had. And I know the list isn't long there between Riseborough and Fletcher and whatnot, but I really think that he is, it might take a little while too. It's not going to be an overnight fix necessarily, judging by how this roster is constructed right now with so many UFAs on the team. Mm-hmm. But when he knows there's a right player for this team, I think he's not afraid to pull the trigger, number one, to make a trade to make it happen, or B, spend the money that's necessary to get that player. And I'm excited to see what he does next, because I know eventually we're going to be kicking the tires possibly on a trade, another trade idea. So this is good for the Wild. I'm glad.
Yeah, and in Chuck Fletcher's defense, I think Chuck meant well, and I think Chuck had at one time good ideas, But he couldn't once that Parisi Suter group and then into the young group didn't progress like we thought. I think it became difficult for him to understand that that group was probably not going to be ever even close to a championship caliber team. So I think Chuck was good at what Chuck did, but it got stale and Chuck didn't really change it. He made some big moves as far as deadline deals and gave up draft picks. But yeah, Bill Guerin, to his credit, and Fenton did start this. So like you can't discount what Fenton did.
For sure.
But Bill Guerin has clearly had an idea of putting his stamp on this franchise. And he's basically morphed things into a direction where I think if you've watched this team for a long time, you can say now it makes sense. Because I'm sorry, the group of guys that they just sort of held on to and seemed to cross their fingers and hoped, the rest of us were like, this now does not make sense.
Correct.
But here's what I love too. If you go to our one of our favorite hockey sites, Cap Friendly Dex.
I love Cap Friendly.
Okay.
Great site.
How much do you love to see this?
I'm looking.
2021-22 wild contracts.
Yep.
Marcus Johansson, after the 21 season, UFA.
Bye-bye.
Bonino, who probably can be brought back.
Sure.
UFA. Nick Bjugstad, UFA. Ian Cole, UFA. Brad Hunt, same thing. The point being, and this circles back to the point that you brought up off the top when I asked you about this trade, you have options here. Guys can walk. If the Wild goes into a swoon before the April 13th trade deadline, guys can be dealt. But you have so much built-in flexibility now with top players potentially still here.
So as of right now, the Wild have $22 million in cap space going into next season, which is a good chunk of change. However, I would remind fans that, yes, those UFAs are coming off the board, but two big RFAs are going to have to be signed. One is Kevin Fiala, who's going to command a good contract, and sure, and you will have to sign Kirill Kaprizov, who is, I believe, you can't give him an offer sheet, and it foregoes RFA status, so I don't think he's a true UFA, and he's not an RFA necessarily either. He's like in this weird area.
It says here, 10.2. It says here in the explanation of rule 10.2 C, this player has not accrued the necessary amount of professional seasons required for group 2 RFA status. They are ineligible for an offer sheet. Please visit the CBA FAQ for more information.
Yeah.
So, but yes, those two guys you are going to want to tie up. No question about it.
So let's ballpark probably, I would say, between both of them, probably about 10 to 11 million.
And the cap's not going up.
And the cap's not going up. It's going to stay the same.
Yeah, I think that's correct. It's going to stay flat. Yes.
So 10 of that, 12 of that million, I'll even say 12. Let's just go 12. 12 of that million is potentially going to go to those two players. So that takes away 20 minus 22. That leaves you $10 million in cap space. And that is, again, a limited amount, but I'm excited to see where that can go. I think you still get creative with how you want to attack that. This
where,
should be good.
Where would you spend it?
Yeah.
What position?
I wonder what I would get.
I have no idea. Goaltending, maybe?
No.
Maybe another defenseman?
I have my guy, Cam Talbot, in the cage right now, and he's looking great.
Center. So the Wild starts off with a West Coast swing.
Yep.
They come back from 3-1 deficits against the LA Kings and win back-to-back games in OT. 4-3. They then get shut out because John Gibson of the Ducks played fantastic on Monday night. We're recording this on Wednesday morning, actually, and the Wild will complete its West Coast swing against the Ducks, second game of that two-game series, and then they will play host to the Sharks in their home opener on Friday. Let me tell you this, Dex. First of all, I like these series.
Yeah, they're fun.
I think the league's on to something here.
I think this
purely
is
by
good.
Accident.
Mm-hmm.
But if you started to go out to the West Coast or play teams, I love the animosity that's built up between these teams. And if you have them play two or three times, it gets to be like a playoff hate. I love this. I think it's fun. I think if I'm the league scheduling wise, I take a long, hard look at doing this more, at having back-to-backs, at least.
I like this fit. I liked this from the get-go. I think this is a good place to be because I don't like the – I mean, the Wild end up traveling a ton because they're in such a weird spot geographically. I kind of like this. I kind of like just staying on – just like baseball, just stay on the road for 10 days. Just stay on the road for the week. Come back home for a week. I think this is honestly – like you said, they stumbled into it for, you know, unnecessary reason – or for unfortunate reasons, I should say.
Right.
But I think this is another thing that the NHL can adopt. We've talked about this with Guerin and other players before that – with the planned tournament and with this 56-game season, it's almost a trial run, a beta, if you will, for things that you can implement when the regular season does restart and things hopefully get back normal the next couple of years. I really do enjoy this. I think it's fun. And also, late night starts, it's not that big of a deal. Were they? They're not that big of a deal.
Well, but here's the key thing. We have not seen, I don't think so far, a 9:30 Central start.
True.
8 p.m. is great.
That's fine.
8 p.m. is fantastic. That's a sweet spot.
Totally.
Because you're done by 11-ish?
Yeah, by 11.
That's absolutely fine.
I like it. I dig it.
Yes. If you have a central time zone team play on the West Coast and drop the puck by at least 9, that's fine. It's the 9:35 starts I detest. All right. Power play deficiency so far.
Oh, boy.
Wild 0-16 on the power play.
Didn't know that was possible.
So here's the question for you.
Yep.
And I believe entering last night's game... entering last night's games, plural, the Wild had the worst power play in the league. Vancouver was 0-15. Wild 0-16. Cause for concern or only a matter of time? This is coming from a guy nicknamed Panic. Is this cause for concern in your mind, Declan Goff?
Yeah.
Or is this simply a 3-game hashtag small sample size, only a matter of time before this team breaks out and you're actually not concerned?
Here's what's so confusing to me is I thought in the first game the power play, even though they didn't score, and they haven't scored at all this season, but I thought in the first game it looked good. They had fine looks in front of the net, and because they couldn't win a face-off to save their lives 5-on-5 or on the power play, we had to blow up all the lines, and I didn't understand that at all. Now the second unit, what I liked from the first unit on opening night, which I believe was Fiala, Kaprizov, Parise, Dumba, Spurgeon.
Correct.
I believe was the first unit.
That was the
and honestly,
game.
I still like that unit.
I agree.
It puts all of your hot shots on one unit, and it makes that second one kind of blah, but I'd rather have this unit out there because Fiala and Kaprizov have to be playing together, at least in the power play. Mm-hmm. If we could have a discussion on should they be on the same line 5-on-5. We can have that discussion. But on the power play, on a man advantage with two dynamic forwards like that, you need them on the ice with a man advantage. So those two have to be together. Now, the conundrum is, who the heck is going to win the faceoff draw? Because right now, Zach Parise has been the one that they tried in training camp, but because it didn't work out so well, you had to throw Nick Bonino in. Look, Nick Bonino, God bless him, I love the guy, but he's not. He has no business being on a number one power play unit.
No.
You can make a case. He has no business being on any power play unit.
No.
So I think you still stick with Parise, or until you find the true number one center, it's going to be pretty damn difficult to do that. But if I was Dean Evason, I would go back for the number one unit of Fiala, Kaprizov, Parise, Dumba, Spurgeon.
Yeah, and so by game three against the Ducks, the top power play for the Wild was Kaprizov, Bonino, Parise, Spurgeon, Fiala, and I believe Fiala was the pseudo left point guy, okay?
Yep.
You're right about what they should do, and I've got some face-off evidence to bring to the table of why I think Parise should be given another shot to try and win faceoffs. Game one, he was a brutal 3 of 9, 3 and 9. So he won 3, he lost 9. But game two, when he still got a chance to take 6 of them, he won 5. He was 5 and 1 against the Kings in game two.
Pretty damn good. Yep.
And game three, he was a respectable enough 3 and 4. So in the past two games, he's 8 and 5.
Great.
Now, Bonino, what Dean loves about him is in the three games, game by game, he was 13-7 in game one, 11-10, so not as good in game two. But then against the Ducks in the game where you're talking about that he was on the top power play unit, he was 11-5, and so he is 35-22. But one is, I want Parise. Or I want Kaprizov, Parise, Fiala up front. Two is, I want Dumba back on that top power play.
Yeah.
And the one thing that actually concerned me, not to fixate too much about shots on goal, the one thing that actually concerned me about the Ducks game overall in the shots on goal category was I believe Dumba had zero shots.
Yeah.
Like, that's not right.
No, it's not.
He has to, one, he'll shoot. Two, he's got a absolute howitzer from the blue line. So I understand what they're trying to do with Bonino winning faceoffs, but I think it's far more dangerous if it's Kaprizov, Parisi, Spurgeon, Dumba, Fiala. And here's my other point, though, about when I ask you cause for concern or only a matter of time before it clicks. I think it is a matter of time, and in fairness to everybody involved, what we need to keep in mind here is this one.
Okay.
Training camp was what? 8 days?
Yeah.
Like, you didn't have any time.
Right.
So if this was an ordinary year, right now we'd be in the midst of training camp, and I believe we'd be about 5 games into preseason games to work on the power play. So I'm not concerned.
Yeah.
But I do think the panic of yanking Parisi off the faceoffs from that top line on the power play was premature. I'd go back to that and give that a shot, because if Bonino, once he is out there and wins the faceoff, what do you do exactly here?
Makes it difficult.
What do you do here?
Yeah, I don't know. I think with the way they've looked on both those power plays, or on the power plays through 3 games, I think mostly they've had good looks. And look, John Gibson's a damn good goaltender, even though Anaheim is dog bleep. And John Gibson is one of the better netminders.
He's too good for him, as Wall said.
Yeah.
He wins games by accident.
He will. So I think eventually the something will break here, and they'll rattle off some power play goals. I wouldn't.
Do we see your guy tonight on the power play? Do we see Brad Hunt come down from the press box? Because I think he might.
Honestly, I think so. I think, you know, you...
I wouldn't
you
do
swap
it yet,
Susie,
personally.
Or you swap whoever. Or actually, I don't even know. Is Ian Cole eligible to play on Wednesday?
He can play tonight.
Okay, so I think Hunt maybe gets in there. I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah, that's fine. My guy, Brad Hunt. He likes White Claws, though, according to our guy.
He's a great
Marcus
guy.
Polino.
He's a great guy.
Yeah.
He's a great guy. But I'm telling you, go back to Dumba, Spurgeon.
Yep.
And if I don't know what the exact power play time on ice was, but it felt like the second group that they used, at least against the Ducks, barely got out there.
Yeah.
So we're talking about that top five.
I agree.
All right. Line combination so far. Your thoughts on what we've had as far as the combinations, because the thing that stands out to me, Dex, is I actually like the third and fourth lines. In all 3 games, one of those two lines to me has been super cohesive and really, really good. I also love the talent of some players who are on the first two lines. The problem there is this, and I think we talked about this a bit on Judd's Hockey Show after the Ducks loss. The problem is I like Kaprizov, I like Fiala, I like Parisi. But those top two lines, because there is no clear-cut center here, to me, lack of cohesiveness that your third and fourth lines definitely have, and I don't think that there is an on-the-roster fix.
Yeah, this is tough, man. I mean, you maybe want to get Joel Eriksson-Ek a look on the top six just because, but at the same time, that his line mates with Greenway and Foligno, that's been arguably the team's most consistent line.
Dino loves it, too,
and
you can tell.
And do you want to break that up? I don't know. You know, you could possibly, once Matt Zuccarello gets back here, who it looks like he's ready to practice, but it'll still take probably a week before he's ready for game shape. Maybe you scratch Victor Rask and move Hartman in for the fourth line center. You know, the fact that there's no true center here.
Zuccarello's just going to add to the wing mix.
Yeah, it's tough. That part is really tough. I think either you give Ek a shot or you don't just banish Bukestad after. Look, he didn't have a great game on opening night, but I mean, for God's sakes, Victor Rask. No, you can't throw out Victor Rask for 16 to 17 minutes with Kirill Kaprizov. You just can't do that. So until you, unless you're going to acquire,
I agree with you, but they're doing it.
A top line center, your only option really is to try Ek, but then that breaks up the cohesiveness of your third line. This is a conundrum. This is a big
and
problem.
And the Bukestad. Okay, so back to the fact that on opening night, Bukestad was on the first line, and then By the second game, he's on the fourth line. Like, that's a drastic demotion for Victor Rask. I think he got demoted in large part because on opening night, again, Declan, he was 0-for-6 on faceoffs. But then he came back in game two on the fourth line and won 4-for-5. Now, in game three, he only won 2-of-7. So that's not great. And if you had a guy to promote, I would do it. But Victor Rask, I mean, what are you doing here?
I don't know.
He can't. I watched the game tonight, and I am not joking, and I'm not trying to be a smartass here.
Okay.
Watch how, if he plays with that top line, he is behind the play consistently. He's reaching. He's behind the play. And I am also not saying that Nick Bjugstad's great. He's not. Ideally, I think he is probably a third or fourth line guy.
Sure.
But that being said, how do you convince yourself, unless you're on the precipice of trading him, which I don't think that they probably are, they couldn't be that fortunate.
Probably not.
How do you convince yourself that Victor Rask, because these are smart guys,
right,
is a top line center? He comes, no, like if I'm Kaprizov, I go into Evason and I'm like, Dean, I can barely speak the language, but I'm going to tell you something right now. 49 ain't my guy.
No, not good. And Victor Rask is playing because there is an opening in the lineup, I guess. And we saw this from Guerin last season where they wanted to give him an opportunity so he could possibly trade him. But no one's trading for Victor Rask unless you're eating some of that money. And man, that is, it stinks. That is a black eye on Paul Fenton. That was a horrible trade. I don't know. I respect him for wanting to break up the room and saying we have to shake up the roster. But for someone,
he gave him away.
And we heard from behind the scenes that he was hell bent on everyone telling him you can't, like, you can trade Nino, that's fine. You can't acquire Victor Rask.
Yes, sir.
You absolutely cannot acquire this.
Analytics department told him you can't do
the
trade.
You can't do this trade.
They told him to shut up.
And that was a mistake by Paulie Fenton. But I don't know. I don't know what you do.
Is he mafia member?
Paulie.
Hey, Paulie Fenton.
Paulie Fenton,
you can't make that trade.
Why don't you get to Victor Rask here?
Make that trade, Paulie Fenton.
I think you have to go try to get the number one center, because up until now, this is just what we're going to have to roll with. It's literally going to be Kaprizov and Fiala dragging them.
So when he is prepared to return from, all we know at this point, an upper body injury, 19-year-old first-round pick Marco Rossi, in your world, Declan, what is his role? Because that's the one that I think a lot of people are waiting on. I will tell you this right now. If you plug him into the first line upon return, I think it's too much. At 19, if he was Kaprizov's age, I'm doing it. At 19, I'm going to give him a shot for sure. I'd prefer it be on the second line way more than from day one. But the Wild might not have a choice here.
I think you have to give him on the first line. I don't care.
And you might be right.
I don't care
well,
that
you don't want to. You don't want to ruin.
You're not going to ruin him.
You don't want to ruin.
You're
him.
Not going to ruin him. Like what? What would be the, like? What, he's going to be a little,
I've seen,
overwhelmed.
Guys ruin before.
I don't.
Yes. By the game itself.
Please.
Yes. Coming back from injury. Yes. I'm saying that.
I don't know, man.
This team's pretty smart about how they go about things. I don't know. That's a lot to ask.
I think you have to try it up and down.
I mean, they might have to.
Would you rather see Victor Rask centering this line or Marco Rossi with no experience? The top line, that is.
Yeah, I mean, that,
the answer answers itself.
Unless I think it's going to be a problem. I'm not going to create any long-term problems for Rossi if I think it. This depends on his mental state to me.
Okay.
That's what it depends on. But the problem is, there is no one on this current roster who can even sniff playing that role. Like, there's not even a guy where you can just plug him in and be comfortable.
No.
Bjugstad's not that guy.
No.
Rask, the only guy who you could justify it, but you would have to break up probably your most solid line, is Ek.
Yeah,
like I would,
on the roster,
I would probably, if I was going, if Marco Rossi comes back, and I'm going to play him, which I'm sure that they will, because they've got what, six games to play him,
mm-hmm,
before they have to make a decision on potentially him going back to Austria or if the juniors in Canada start. if I was going to play him, and I will, I would put him on the second line, and I would promote Eck. That's what I would do.
Okay.
But, I mean, I'd promote Eck tonight.
Yeah. One of those two
like,
things.
This is not, to me, this is not tenable. I can't have Kaprizov, who is phenomenal, and Parisi, who's very solid. Like, he's good at being Zach.
Yep.
I can't have them with Rask or Bukestead.
No.
So I guess I call Greenway, Foligno, and Eck together, and I say, you guys did a great job, and if I can, if in the future I'm in a position to reunite you, I'm going to do it. But it's not like they're going to deteriorate.
No.
But I guess Dex, so just to go through this off the top of my head quickly, right now, I guess what I would do is I'd go Eck on my top line,
mm-hmm.
okay? I would go Bukestead on my third line.
Okay.
So I would put him in the Eck role between Foligno and Greenway.
Yep.
I'm putting Rask back on my fourth line. And who's my second line guy right now? Who's been their second line?
Bonino or Bukestead.
Bonino.
Yeah.
So I'm putting Bonino. Bonino's my second. So I'm going for tonight's game against the Ducks. I would go personally depth chart wise. Eck first line, Bonino second line, Bukestead third line, Rask fourth line.
Yeah, I think that's fine. I think you have to do that.
And then if Rossi can play, I probably bump Bonino down, Rossi to second line, and then if he fits in and he's good, he goes to first line.
Did you say
line.
Bonino between the on the second line?
Second line.
I would actually put him, third I would line. Put Bonino on third because I think his skill set is more similar to X, and Bukestead would be, I think, better served to be in the top six.
Okay, that's fine. Role. That's fine. But Eck has to get a chance at some point.
I agree. And I think that's probably going to come here very soon.
All right. Loaded question for you.
All right.
Can't believe I'm about to ask this.
I know.
Does the lack of depth and just overall competence, at least top six at center, make you miss Eric Staal or Mikko Koivu?
Staal, yes. I do miss Eric Staal, and this might be this Johansson for Staal trade. It might end up being one of Guerin's also worst trades. Johansson looks
it's three games.
Overreaction.
Small sample size. You're a young man. You got a point to sample size.
And a lot of people said, why are the Wild going to trade their if de facto best center for a guy who can't really play center, even though he has a history of it? This could end up biting them in the butt. And through four games for Buffalo, Eric Staal just has a one assist, no goals. But I would feel a lot better about the Wild's top line if Eric Staal was centering it. I will say that. I'd feel a lot better about it. I'm not saying it would be a godsend decision and everything is going up Wild, but I do think Eric Staal would right now be the best center on the Wild, like he was the last basically 3 years.
I hate this question, and I asked it.
I know you did. This is you, man.
So Koivu's been out with the Jackets with COVID, correct?
Correct. He's okay. On the COVID list.
He was.
I don't miss my coach.
By the end of last season, he was a fourth line guy.
Right.
And so he could not play first line. Or I guess he could, but it would not be good. All right. Eric Staal. Let's go there.
Okay.
Because Eric Staal, from a on-ice personnel standpoint, would be this team's best center choice for that top line right now. Okay.
Okay.
So I get that.
Yep.
That being said, the question then to me becomes, is having him out of the room worth the trade-off of not having the attributes that he might bring as a veteran who had definitely slowed down? So I'm not saying that he was not the Eric Staal that he was a couple of years back when he scored, 40 goals or something. He was not that player. But he would, I still think, be the best choice to play center on that top line. But that being said, with Guerin having a clear vision of who he wanted to move on from,
yeah.
Eric Staal was on that list for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So I would not take him back right now because I think that this team, as far as its roster construction goes and as far as where it is philosophically, I still think it's in transition.
Yeah.
And the transition is necessary. And so if I thought that this team was like pretty damn good, It's a nice team with nice components. I don't think it's pretty damn good yet.
Of course.
If it was pretty damn good, I would say, you really missed Staal. But because of the fact that Guerin did such a good job and has done a good job of cleaning out the players around, for the most part, Parisi and Suter, mm-hmm. I like the move a lot. And so from the standpoint of, would he be your best center on the top line right now? The answer is yes. Am I glad he's not here? My answer is yes. So it's sort of a in-depth discussion of the trade-off that you make by not having him both physically on the ice, but also in that locker room. And I didn't, and I wanted him moved out of that room.
I understand those reasons. That makes sense. I will say right now, if take the locker room aspect aside, Eric Staal is right now a more valuable asset to the Wild than Marcus Johansson would be.
This is true.
So that
we'll not argue that for one second.
That part is true.
Not argue that for one second.
That, but again, this might be probably Guerin's worst trade. Like the Zucker trade I liked, even though Galchenyuk wasn't anything, he got a first-round pick and he got Addison out of it. I think that's a good trade. This pattern for Cole trade, I think is a fine trade. It just washes out. Like I like Cole more. Yeah.
I do like Cole more.
And I think this is going to be, I would like Eric Staal back, but I think in general, him getting out of that room, like you said, is probably a good thing.
And I do think at some point in time here, Johansson's going to get a shot.
Yep. He's going to be
in
one.
The middle.
He might get it before Ek does.
I don't think he's going to be great there, but I think he's going to get that shot. But yeah, I mean, the Eric Staal trade to me was way more about clearing Eric Staal out. The Nino trade for Rask is awful because he was still at an age where I think that there was an upside that teams could have seen and potentially given the Wild more back. Mm-hmm. Staal is not going to get you much. So it might be Guerin's worst trade, but to me, it's not as offensive as the Rask trade because I think the entire goal was to clear Staal off this team.
I agree.
And they basically took a flyer, right?
Yep.
Johansson's a flyer player.
Yes.
Like he might be okay. He might not. But the most important thing is he is an unrestricted free agent who can walk after the 2021 season and create cap space.
And that's good.
How weird is it for me to say this? In fact, you know what? I'm going to create some transition music here.
Oh, okay.
Hold on a second.
What do you got?
Next talking point. How weird is it for me to say that the Wild going to 3-on-3 OT is now a welcome sight if you are a fan of this team? The last 2 years apiece, Declan Goff, the Wild in 3-on-3 in each of the last two years won three games apiece and often looked terrible and would throw out lines or guys like Koivu and Parisi, Suter. It would be basically watching very quick teams play against a snail's pace, right?
Yeah, it'd be like a junior's team playing against a men's league.
And Dubnyk would give up some god-awful goal, and you'd go home with your 1 point and be PO'd. Those two games against the Kings were fantastic.
Yes.
You can now trot out Kaprizov, Fiala, Spurgeon, and now the guys that come after are okay. But the fact is, I think that the Wild, the last 2 years, if you had taken a survey and said, who do you want to see or who wants to go to 3-on-3 OT, the Wild would be near the bottom of the league and you would say, I do not want to see them. It's bad for them. It's bad for the fan experience. The Wild now, to me, probably moves into the top third of this league as far as give me 97 and 22. And I will watch this all night long.
This is great. Finally, the Wild are enjoyable in overtime.
How weird is that?
I mean, for God's sakes, I'm looking forward to now overtime games because Fiala and Kaprizov are going to go up and down the ice. It'd be even more fun if you get Stalock involved because he's a force skater on the ice too. But I do think Fiala and Kaprizov give this team such a different dynamic that at this point, I mean, you put them out there the whole time. Like, if you ask
they
to go
might
to five,
die if you do that, but
I don't care. It was so much fun watching Kaprizov setting up plays in those first two overtime games, and he was worth the hype, and him and Fiala deserve to be out there. This is exactly what you want. You don't want guys like Staal. You don't want guys like Koivu or Brodin or Suter being out there for a significant period of overtime. These are the guys you want. And now all of a sudden, yeah, the Wild can actually get 2 points in overtime instead of walking away with just one.
Game two, Zach did not take the ice.
Love that.
And it, That was the game where Kaprizov set up Johansson, who beat Quick with that sort of knuckle shot to win the game.
Yeah.
And I believe that went almost the entire 5-minute period, and Zach didn't get on the ice. Think about that for a second.
That is pretty nuts. That's not the old wild card. I can tell you that much. Not the old wild card.
Is there, in your opinion, a bigger drop-off in sports, though, than going from 3-on-3, which I think is glorious. I love it. I think it's absolutely one of the most fun things in sports to watch. From going from that to now, the shootout. And I'll give you an example. So on Sunday, on the NBC national game, it was the Penguins and Caps, okay? They went to a shootout. And Declan, I swear to God, both teams, and we're talking skill here, right? Like we're talking Crosby, Malkin, Ovechkin. Both teams went through the shootout looking as uninspired and as bored. And guys used to come up with moves and stuff, right? The Koivu move. It looks to me, for the most part, like guys have punted there.
Yep.
I think there might not be a bigger drop-off in sports than going from a session that very much resembles pond hockey with some of the greatest players in the world to a skills competition, which I think now bores a lot of players.
And by the way, when you say drop off, that's not an insult at the game or insult at the situation. Right?
No, because 3-on-3 is fantastic.
Exactly.
No, I love that part of it.
And I think that's great. And I mean, there isn't a sport that really does it like that. College football is, has a unique setup where the ball's on the 25 or the 10.
25. Is
25.
Correct.
And I love that. I think the NFL should honestly adopt that policy. I think that would be great.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if we were kicking around ideas, baseball would do a home run derby after 12. The NBA would probably do a 3-point contest. There could be fun ways that other teams
can
implement.
But I don't want skills things. What I love is 3-on-3 is still the sport.
Right.
But it's open ice.
Right. And I like that.
Like, I don't want shootouts, home run derbies, 3-point. I don't want that. What I want is you to play the sport.
Yes.
But the shootout is now boring.
Yeah, the shootout stinks.
But I mean, this is the Penguins and Capitals.
Right.
Two highly skilled teams. And literally every shot was like, yeah, okay, here, I'll shoot it. Like, players are bored with it now. Fans are bored. When it started, especially in this country, I completely got it.
Yep.
It made people happy.
It was needed.
It got them out of their seats. But Declan, now it's boring. It's
correct.
Boring. And I want to see it gone. I want to see 3-on-3, 10-minute overtime period. And if you're tied, you're tied. Like, ties bother me a lot less.
I agree.
Than a skills competition, which I think now has eroded to the point of the players don't want to do it.
I agree.
All right, last thing for you.
Yep.
Hold on a second. Little Hartford Whalers brass bonanza takes us into the final exercise of today's Judd's Hockey Show. I want to start, and I think we should do this once a month. I want to start by going through the right now, because it's going to change, what we think should be the wild protected list for the Seattle Kraken expansion draft, which I think will fall in late July of 2021.
This is going to be fun. I like
you
this
start.
Idea. Okay.
You start. And it's going to be the expansion list, your pick of if you choose to go 7-3-1 or 8-1. But what do you think the wild expansion list will be?
Okay, so here is what I would do. I'm gonna give you both.
In fact, we should play some of this.
Yeah, I'm gonna do both.
Hockey music.
8 skaters,
mm-hmm.
And I'm gonna do the 7 forwards, 3 defensemen.
Okay.
So I'm gonna give you both those lists here. And I'll start going once you got some music there.
Yep.
You want me to go? There you go. All right.
Just pot that down a little bit. We can do a little brass bonanza.
So,
okay.
Obviously, for the 8 skaters, you're going to have to protect all your players with no movement clauses, which means 5 of the spots are already taken. That's Zach Parise. That's Matt Zuccarello. That's Ryan Suter. That's Jared Spurgeon. And that's Jonas Brodin, which means only 3 spots are left on those 8 skater list.
Okay, so go through your... So it's Parise,
Zuccarello,
Suter,
Spurgeon,
and Brodin.
Brodin.
Yep.
So that's 5 of the 8 already taken up.
Yep.
The 3 players I would protect would be Kevin Fiala, Marcus Foligno, and Matt Dumba.
Ooh, okay, we disagree on one.
Kirill Kaprizov is exempt from this. He is not. You don't have to protect him. He's exempt from this
correct.
List.
So
he,
correct.
So
correct.
That's why he's off this list for people if are you confused. So again,
yep.
My eight skater expansion protection list would be Parisi, Zuccarello,
yep.
Fiala, Foligno, Dumba, Suter, Spurgeon, Brodin.
Okay.
What do you? Let me just do the 7-3-1 then?
Yeah. All right. Yep. Let's go through them and then tear it apart.
So then the 7-4-3 defenseman route, which is the traditional route that yes. most teams do.
Yes, because it, yep.
And again, those five, I'll go with my fours here. So Parise has to be protected. Zuccarello has to be protected. Then I would go Kevin Fiala, Foligno, Eck, Greenway, and then player to be named later.
Your new center.
Player to be named
your
later.
New, your new center.
Borrow a baseball
because you have now traded Matt Dumba.
Yes. Which means, because if you go the 7-3-1 route, your defensemen are already taken. Like, you literally already have three defensemen
Spurgeon,
that are taken.
Suter,
and
Brodin. Yes, sir.
You literally, you can't.
And Talbot, your
there's
goaltender.
No one else you can protect from your defense.
Correct.
Like, if you do the 7-3-1 route, that's already in place.
Correct.
So that's why I think the Wild might be more inclined, if they don't make a trade, that is, to do the 8-skater route. Because
yeah.
otherwise, you're going to lose Dumba.
Yes.
And look, this would mean you'd expose Joel Eriksson Ek, who would probably potentially be taken by Seattle. But I think Foligno is more valuable to this team than Joel Eriksson Ek is.
Interesting.
Even though Ek is a center and Foligno is not.
Yep. Yeah. So on 7-3-1, we agree completely. Like, right now,
yeah, it's pretty
easy. I don't have a seventh forward I would protect.
No.
There's not even one where I'm like debating, boy, should I protect that guy? What, Jerry Mayhew? Sorry. Okay. So
my guy.
I'll just go down my list of eight, which right now I agree completely, would be what they would do. And we disagree on one.
All right.
So to your point, Suter, Zuccarello, Spurgeon, Parisi, Brodin, must protects. Which hurts. Because Matt Zuccarello. My eighth skater, though, is not the same as yours.
Okay.
Because I am going Ek, because he's a center.
Oh, wow.
And I can't I can't lose another one.
All right.
I just can't.
I get that. Yep, I get that.
And so now I've exposed Greenway, Foligno, Soucy, and I believe Kapo has to be protected as well, so he won't be because I'm protecting Talbot.
Yep.
And my guess is that there will be a better goaltender choice probably, or choices. So I'm guessing that they wouldn't take Kapo. So I'm going to hold my breath, and I think they might take Greenway. Foligno's a veteran, and I like him, but he's sort of a guy who would probably fit in more on a contending type of team.
Yes.
Like, I think he'd be great in the room, but you're young, and I know that the Golden Knights didn't, but you really should not be good. Like, you should not be.
Right.
The Kraken should not be great. Now, they've got the same expansion rules as the Golden Knights, so there's actually going to be pressure to compete
yes.
and be good. But in my world, expansion teams stink and get high draft picks. So that being said, I think that unless he's just awful in 2021, I think the best wild card, if you're the Kraken, is Greenway.
Yeah.
Because he's young. If he matures, I mean, if he matures, he's Tuck, right?
Yeah. That's
like, he's not right now, but he would be Tuck.
I see no...
I don't disagree with you, but my point
but yes,
is
I
that
mean.
I would hold my breath and say that they're not going to take Foligno because he doesn't really fit the profile of what an expansion team should want. Greenway absolutely does. And so if they pass on Foligno and I lost Greenway, I'm not super happy about that, but I'm also not devastated. And I'm certainly not doing what a bunch of teams, including Chuck Fletcher in the Wild, did back in the day with the Vegas Golden Knights, which was to say, oh, we'll trade you somebody so you don't take our guy. No, that's
no,
done.
No.
Game, set, match, hard pass on that. So, yeah, Parisi, Fiala, I go Ek, Zuccarello, Suter, Spurgeon, Dumba, and Brodin. But I do, to your point, go back to 7-3 if I can get a center in a Dumba trade.
I dig it. I think those are, that's probably what's going to have to happen. If you don't trade Matt Dumba, you're going to have to go the 8-skater route. If you keep Matt Dumba, you have to go the 8-skater route.
What's your best guess right now?
Like, which one happens more? Like,
yeah. Like right now, if you had to guess, is Dumba there by the time we get to the expansion draft?
I don't think
so. And by there, I mean on the Wild.
I don't think he's on the Wild. No, I think he's going to get dangled, and I think he's going to get traded.
In season or draft time before the expansion draft?
I want it to be in season. I think it'll probably happen draft time. I want it to be in season.
I guess the one thing I'm curious about when it comes to that is how much does Bill Guerin look at this division?
Mm-hmm.
and see the possibility.
Yep.
Because I think if you want to truly compete in 2021, if you want to truly compete, you have to go get a center.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even have to be a great one, but it's got to be a guy who can at least slot in to the top line. Mm-hmm. The funniest thing is it's probably going to be a guy like Staal.
Right.
For the short term. So I think that that's probably necessary. But here's the wild card to this entire discussion, too. So to me, Dex, the fourth spot in the West, which is the final playoff spot, is very much open, and the Wild probably can grab it.
Yep.
But then if you finish four, you're probably going to play the Avs in round one. I don't think you're beating the Avs. Like, the Avs are damn good, man. They can move. I mean, the only question there is goaltending. So if you assume, hey, we can grab the fourth spot, but we're going to be a pretty easy first round out, how much do you move heaven and earth potentially at that point in time to do that? And I don't know what Bill Guerin's response off the record would be to that question.
Yeah, I mean, if he has an opening, then they have to attack it. Colorado and Vegas are obviously very good teams. The Wild would not be favored in either of those series. But I think I'd take my chances against Colorado instead of Vegas. Colorado's going to fly up and down the ice, but there's a soft spot in goaltending there, and I trust Vegas' depth in their goaltending more than I do Colorado.
If Colorado's smart, I think I'd probably try and make a trade
for a tender
very soon.
Yes.
Grubauer's okay, and he could certainly play, but the Golden Knights do have two guys that can play goal.
Yeah.
And the Golden Knights, but it's just from Bill Guerin's perspective, I don't know how he really feels about this current team as far as expectations go.
I get that.
All right, Judd's Hockey Show, we're done. Of course, you can join us for post-game one-timers as well that we do quite frequently after Wild games, often on Twitter and Score North social platforms. And every Wednesday, we tape a longer episode in which we break down the world of hockey and the Wild. He's Declan. I'm Judd.
Pass, shoot, score.